So here are the three things that I think you should know about on this day. CNN, the news channel of wars and neocons, is putting out an unsourced story saying the talks between Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin are off. Fact or fiction? I'm going to break it down for you. Russia's top diplomat, Sergei Lavrov, has a message for CNN, and we're going to let you hear it. And the anatomy of a CIA coup in Venezuela. A gun for hire, chosen to take out President Nicolas Maduro, spills the beans to Max Blumenthal. And you're going to hear the interview, and Max will join us right here as well, live on The Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we're going to start today with CNN because they're reporting something which is kind of hard to believe and also impossible to ignore. Using unnamed sources that possibly don't even exist, the network seems to be doing what it can to try and thwart the summit between President Trump and Mr. Putin in Hungary. Believing this story comes down to really a question of credibility, right? Can CNN be trusted on a story like this? Well, here's what viewers in America, I thought I'd throw this in. Think of CNN these days. The ratings are out, and what they show is that over the last couple of years, fewer and fewer people are trusting CNN, and fewer people are actually watching CNN. According to Adweek, here's how they did in the last quarter of last year, right? Quote, the network experienced a 42% decline in total viewers, 58% decline in viewers 25 to 54, in other words, younger viewers, during prime time compared to the third quarter of 2024. During total day, it had losses of 29% and 45% in total viewers and the key demo, respectively. Okay, that was 2024. Let's look at 2025, see how they're doing this year. Here we go. CNN's viewership hits historic low in July 2025. Disastrously bad, the article says. It goes on to say that, quote, CNN suffered a dramatic collapse in viewership in July of 2025, recording its lowest primetime ratings in history. Nielsen data reveals that CNN's primetime lineup, the entire lineup, beginning to end, right, averaged 497,000 total viewers. Now, think about this. Let me put it in perspective. CNN spends almost $1 million a year just to cover news, and they can't even get a half a million people to watch. And by the way, the vast majority of their audience, in study after study, they're retirees in their 70s or higher who are actually barely watching. You see, in the United States, and this is going to maybe surprise you if you're not in the United States, CNN is either free or dirt cheap to get on your TV. It's almost like a government feed in many places, but they funnel it through Comcast and AT&T. And those two companies have bought out every other cable companies, including DirecTV. And they have very direct ties to the U.S. government. So what does that mean? Well, what it means is that CNN's ratings are not a true measure of its actual audience size. Yes, it's on everywhere. No matter where you go, you can find CNN. But half the time, nobody's actually watching them. CNN is part of America's background noise in homes and in businesses. So, in fact, let's do this by comparison's sake. There are podcasts, including mine, including Max Blumenthal's, that often get more viewers than that with one single episode than the entire lineup for CNN on any given night. And the budget for Max is one one-thousandth the size of CNN's budget. And then there's Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens. Forget about it. They consistently double and triple those numbers in an alternative media field that swamps cable news. So here's the difference. The people watching those shows, they're young, they're engaged, they're active, they're responsive. You know who CNN is responsive to? Comcast, AT&T, and other billion-dollar corporations who buy their ads, right, for access. And among those are even military contractors. Raytheon. doing commercials on CNN. They actually place ads like the one I'm about to show you all over cable TV, just in case somebody out there is, you know, thinking about buying, I don't know, a tank or maybe a fighter jet or a Patriot missile system.
Raytheon has a common mission, and that common mission creates this environment where everyone wants to work together. They want to collaborate with one another because they see the connection between what they do and the mission that they support each and every day. What we do saves lives. It protects peace and democracy throughout the world.
Protects peace and democracy and saves lives. Really? Try telling that to the hundreds of thousands of Palestinians or the hundreds of thousands of Iraqis or Afghanis or Syrians. Man, I could go on and on. Of people all over the world who were killed in unnecessary and endless wars that made Raytheon, yeah, that company you just saw there in that commercial, the one that stands for peace and democracy, made Raytheon one of the most profitable companies in the history of the world. Anyway, that's who CNN is responsive to, in case you wanted to know. Do they even dare to put on the air, for example, a contrasting point of view? Say a Max Blumenthal, or maybe a CIA analyst like Larry Johnson, who's one of the most respected geopolitical thinkers in the world, by the way, and was here on my show just yesterday. He was sitting right there.
My last appearance on CNN was in 2017 with Brian Stelter to talk about the FBI spying on Trump. And where I talked about that, in fact, it was British MI6, mm-hmm. British intelligence, was, and they're passing it to the CIA. And then he accused me. He says, well, you go on RT. You're just a puppet of Putin.
There you go. Can't beat him with facts. Just make an accusation. And here is UN weapons inspector Scott Ritter, who was also sitting right here next to me the other day. And he said something really similar. They're essentially apparatchiks themselves these days.
There was only one news host who would call me up and ask me to come on and talk about the issue seriously. Only one.
Wow.
You. You were it. No one else.
Did me a lot of good. I asked them to come on, and then they fired me. Sorry. Thought I'd drop that in. So why is CNN trying to kill the talks between Putin and Trump? Because that's exactly what Raytheon and the other military contractors would want them to do. You see, to them, a war stance with Russia is essential, right? Because peace is not profitable. Let me say that again. Peace is simply not profitable. So let's analyze the article now that just came out on CNN. Headline. Trump's hopes for summit with Putin have stalled. They're the only ones saying this, the only ones writing this. Why? By the way, do I think it's BS? Here's the dead giveaway as to why this story is absolute BS. Ask yourself, according to whom? And there it is, right there in the first graph, quote, an administration official. Oh, I know those administration officials. I used to get news when I worked there from administration officials. I always thought, in other words, who is this person? The janitor? Could it be a high-ranking person? The cook? It could be nobody. Think about it. Here's the network run by neocons and war hawks, and they're going with a story that suggests the talks between two leaders of superpowers, Putin and Trump, are off. And their source? It's just some guy in the administration, which could be one of about 10,000 people, by the way. Is that believable, considering the source? Of course not. According to one of the actual negotiators, by the way, this guy's a real source because he's at the negotiation table with Marco Rubio. He says he's willing to go on the record, and he did yesterday. Here's Russia's top diplomat, Sergei Lavrov.
I was surprised to read today that CNN is reporting that the Putin-Trump meeting may be postponed after my conversation with Marco Rubio. I read that American officials have concluded that Russia's position has barely changed since then and remains within the bounds of its initial maximalist demands. The dishonesty of many Western media outlets is well known, and CNN is notorious for this. They are generally not inclined towards serious analytical work, preferring rather to use simplistic slogans that are thrown out and drummed into the ears of their audiences.
Look, this is not about being pro-Russia, okay? It's about telling the truth about CNN. Because, and now think about this, after they get the anchors at CNN and other networks in America, this is the way this plays out, and other networks like CNN and others to believe that they're friendly and peaceful and democracy loving, and then they spout that to their audience every day, which is dwindling, right? That they'd never heard a fly. How do those corporations then, acting with U.S. agencies, actually treat people around the world? Like, how do they really treat people around the world? Is it the way they said, peaceful, and all these other wonderful adjectives? Do they save lives? Do they help these countries where they go become more democratic? The answer to that question has just been revealed with a case study that I found extremely revealing, published by The Gray Zone, no less, of course. Here's Max Blumenthal, one of the best news gatherers in the business, talking with a gun for hire, who explains how the CIA, in conjunction with some of the biggest names in the U.S. government, hired him to topple the government of Venezuela.
Big attack, and it killed a lot of Venezuelans. It was a refinery that was attacked.
Yeah, that's correct.
I don't know the number of how many Venezuelans were killed, but this attack was perpetrated by, you know, U.S. intelligence working with Venezuelan opposition, I guess you could say, saboteurs.
Horn, who was the policy advisor for Mike Pence, it was sent to his, one plan was sent to his White House email account on December 8th, 2019, and it basically spelled out ideas for toppling Maduro. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, there were several, that individual is trying to find initiatives to get this done. When I first met with him,
who are you talking about?
Horn.
Horn, okay. Horn.
He was incredibly excited that somebody was working on this. And, you know, things like, we don't care how bloody it is. When this is done, the money will flow. You know, this is the exact quote, right? It's like,
that's Jordan Gaudreau. Look, the guy's no saint, right? He's obviously an opportunist. But he explains how he plotted to overthrow President Nicolas Maduro's government. Who hired him? Who did he directly talk to? Was he some guy out there on his own? Who was he giving his marching orders? Or who was giving him his marching orders? Gaudreau explains involvement of the CIA as well as those at the highest levels of the U.S. government at the time. They were all in on it, according to him, from the office of the president to the office of Vice President Mike Pence.
Obviously, you have the intelligence community folks with the FBI and the DEA and Venezuelan opposition folks. And then you have the element, like my team, that was trying to actually do the work as being, hired by and directed by the Trump administration. And then the third component is the global governments. These are the guys who hired me. Their intent or their piece in this was they wanted business contracts. And so they wanted a way to monetize, I suppose, the aftermath of a Maduro-free Venezuela.
Monetize. By the way, you know how the Trump administration is now trying to make a case of the drug trafficking against the Venezuelan government, that they're responsible for all those cartels. They created the cartels that we've been hearing so much about that's been in the news in places, of course, like CNN. Well, here's a plot twist for you. It was actually the CIA who was involved from the beginning in drug trafficking to the U.S. by some of those very same cartels.
You have an intelligence community that has been, obviously, I mean, I saw your reporting the other day in the 90s, Cartel de Solas was stood up by the CIA. This is no secret. I mean, this is the truth. I mean,
this is the cartel which Nicolas Maduro is said to be in charge of, but may be actually defunct. And you're confirming that it was set up by the CIA in the 90s.
Well, absolutely. This is not, we've known this for quite some time. You have an intelligence agency that, quite frankly, they will withstand changes in presidency. And so they have their TSSCI projects running. and their ability to facilitate and to aggregate resources from drug trade. And this is what they're trying to protect. So how does it benefit them to get rid of Nicolas Maduro, right? Like, it really doesn't. I know that you know, largely they're relying on the fact that Venezuela is a narco state, but that's the irony, right? I mean, okay, Venezuela is a narco state, but their partner is the CIA. Is it? I mean.
I wanted to share this with you because it reads like the anatomy of a coup, not a successful one, but another coup nonetheless. And I think it's important for all of us to understand that this story is repeated over and over and over again all over the world. And it's rarely about democracy. It's almost always about greed. It's just that the American people rarely get a chance to hear about something like that, unless they happen to check in on the gray zone, which many and many, many people are these days. What, you think, by the way, CNN is going to tell you about this? That's why people depend on reporters like Max Blumenthal. And Max is good enough to join us now to pick up the story from here. My friend Max, how are you, sir? Great work.
Good to see you, Rick. Thanks.
I was fascinated by Mr. Gaudreau. I really was. And I think he generally seems to be telling the truth. And you were pushing him, and he was kind of nervous and scared throughout the entire interview. Is he telling the truth about this coup that he tried to pull off?
Well, unless the discovery documents that he acquired through being prosecuted by the U.S. government are fabricated, then he is telling the truth, and that this goes much higher than we realized. And I think if we look at what the Trump administration is doing now, not just in Venezuela, but in Greenland, in Congo, in Pakistan, and I'll explain why those areas are relevant here. It's a straight up resource grab in Venezuela. And that's why Jordan Gaudreau was initially recruited by this group, Global Governments, which was run by Trump's body man, one of the closest people to Donald Trump, someone who might not be that well known to the public, but who is extremely influential right now, named Keith Schiller. So we have all the names of influential people in the Trump organization, what you could kind of call the Trump regime. And they're all over these documents. What wound up happening was an embarrassingly failed coup, which left Jordan Gaudreau hung out to dry. And so they all have plausible deniability right now. But now they're going for the same thing with the U.S. Navy on a massive deployment. And once again, they're all vying for contracts in the day after in a post-Maduro Venezuela. So what we have here with Operation Gideon, which was the plot that Jordan Gaudreau enacted, which is now mocked as the Bay of Piglets, the stupid Bay of Pigs, and started out as Operation Edgemont, was sort of a pilot program for what Marco Rubio is attempting right now.
He actually says at one point, the plan is to take out Maduro, and that way we can monetize his assets. I mean, how disgusting. How much more plain can he be about what the intent of this was? Sounds like just pure greed based on lies.
Yeah, I mentioned Keith Schiller. He was the Trump body man, sort of played bodyguard, but was also sort of a private liaison who had an arms export control license. He was one of the initial figures in making this deal to secure someone like Jordan Gaudreau, who was a special forces, a former U.S. Green Beret, as the kind of muscle. They believed that they had consolidated a force close to Nicolas Maduro within the military that would flip, and that it would be easy for them to secure some kind of coup. And they were working within the Venezuelan opposition with two figures, Jorge Betancourt and Lester Toledo, right, who Jordan, I think, correctly identified as CIA assets. Lester Toledo is now an advisor to Nayib Bukele, the Salvadoran president. And these were the key guys who then folded this operation into a formal contract signed by Juan Guaido, recognized as the president of Venezuela by the U.S., and J.J. Rendon, the top political consultant in Venezuela, to actually kidnap Nicolas Maduro and extricate him out of Venezuela in exchange for a $10 million performance bonus. I mean, this was a formal contract. But going back to Keith Schiller and this global governments group, yes, the openly stated objective was to steal Venezuela's resources by removing this kind of nationalist government of Nicolas Maduro and installing someone like Maria Corina Machado, the Nobel War Prize winner, who has openly promised in an interview with Donald Trump Jr. to hand over lucrative contracts to Trump Incorporated. And where is Keith Schiller right now? He's a lobbyist for Pakistan to negotiate rare earth mineral deals with the Trump organization. And he's been in and out of Greenland with his new company called GreenMet to attempt to plunder Greenland's rich mineral resources out from under the government of Denmark, which controls Greenland. So it's really obvious what's going on and what Trump Incorporated is about, which is to use the U.S. military or private operators, mercenaries, in order to enrich themselves. And I guess as U.S. taxpayers, we're kind of footing the bill and paying the price of the backlash, which, if there is a regime change in Venezuela through an invasion, would be another massive migration wave.
Those of us from Latin America know that this is an old story. The United States has been doing this for the past 100 years. It just seems curious to me that they would be so blatant in this example to just go in there and take out the old playbook and try and play it again. And by the way, they've been doing this for a long, long time in Venezuela. This is not the first failed coup. They keep trying and trying to take out people who were democratically elected, whether we like them or not, whether we like Chavez or we like Maduro, their people elected them. And they should stay in office until they're removed democratically. No? Am I crazy?
Well, I mean, even if it wasn't democratic, there's nothing that's more undemocratic than a foreign government marching into a country, toppling its government, stealing its resources, impoverishing its people, and then just simply leaving them with whatever puppet leadership was installed. And that's what happened throughout the banana wars that you're referring to in Latin America. I mean, read the memoirs of Smedley Butler, the U.S. Marine, who said, I was basically the muscle for a gigantic business cartel. The U.S. Marines marched into Port-au-Prince in Haiti and stole Haiti's gold. They stormed into Nicaragua to steal the country on and Guatemala to steal those countries' land on behalf of the United Fruit Company. And Smedley Butler woke up and realized that he was basically being used by something that had nothing to do with the United States people, the American people or American democracy. He was just enriching a bunch of oligarchs with top hats. And Jordan Goodreau is kind of playing the same role. I don't know if he has the same awareness, but he's one of many figures who are vying to kind of be the cowboy hero, storming into Caracas, being welcomed as liberators, and realizing the people didn't actually want them there. His fellow U.S. Green Berets and a few Venezuelan rebels who'd been camped out in the Colombian jungles were actually captured by Cooperativos, fishermen on the coast of Venezuela, and easily arrested, and they were sold out. But why did they go in? It was ultimately because the Trump administration organized this $15 million bounty on the head of Nicolas Maduro, and they've now raised it to, I think, $50 million, which is the same bounty that was over the head of Osama bin Laden. What they're doing with that bounty is they're trying to entice people, whether it's Jordan Goodreau or Eric Prince, from the former Blackwater Company Academy, who controls an entire training base in North Carolina called Camp Moyac. And there was a prospectus in the discovery documents that Jordan Goodreau got for 500 mercenaries to train at Eric Prince's base to go into Venezuela. So they're trying to get as many private operators to go in as possible to terrorize Venezuela. And this keeps happening. I mean, in 2018, Nicolas Maduro was nearly assassinated in a Colombian intelligence operation through a drone at a military parade. You can watch the video of that. I interviewed Nicolas Maduro months afterwards, and he directly blamed John Bolton. Well, guess what? Jordan Goodreau said that John Bolton was operating behind the scenes here in attempting to influence these kinds of coups. And What Trump is doing is, even as he's arresting or indicting John Bolton, is like Bolton's fantasy on steroids.
Why did Goodrow talk to you? That was interesting watching the interview. He seemed nervous. He seemed scared. Maybe not scared, but he seemed like he was very halting in his delivery to you, like he was wondering and catching himself oftentimes. Why was he so concerned? And why did he talk to you? How'd you bag this interview?
Well, I think he would talk to you. And he's pretty much talking to anyone he can right now. But for some reason, the U.S. mainstream media doesn't want to talk to him. There's also a film out about him called Man of War. And so I got this interview through a PR agent who I know, who I'm friendly with, who was actually, who had gotten in touch with Jordan Goodrow. And I was the only interviewer of those who've interviewed him, I think, who's read the court documents and actually studied the discovery.
Right.
So I was going through it very carefully with Jordan. I think he was being, he was just trying to be precise because he's facing this federal prosecution for trafficking arms. And I mean, this is an important point here. Jordan Goodrow is facing prosecution for doing something that it appears the Trump administration or key figures wanted him to do.
Yes.
Why is that? It's because they want to keep him wrapped up in the courts so he can't talk about more, specifically the CIA's role. He wants to get classified documents. At the end of our interview, he said, please put me on trial. I mean, if they put him on trial, then he can gather more documents. And then there's the other figure in this coup named Cliver Alcala, who was a Venezuelan general who flipped and trained with Goodrow's men in the Colombian jungle. After this operation, the U.S. put a bounty on Alcala's head, falsely accused him of being a drug trafficker, and then basically kidnapped him and disappeared him. Why? They don't want him talking. So they're trying to silence these guys after they urge them to go all the way to Caracas.
Does it bother you that so much of this stuff is out there? Obviously, I don't expect some of the hacks at CNN and Fox News to do the kind of reporting that you do, because they wouldn't even know how. But at least they can pick up a story from a good reporter and try to build on it, like we're trying to do here right now. Does it bother you that it doesn't get picked up? Because Americans should know about this.
I mean, it's an exciting story. It's a sexy story, and it's a bizarre story with a compelling figure. So, yeah, I am surprised that they don't want to talk to him. But now we're at a point where the U.S. is on the verge of attacking inside Venezuela. Trump has said they're going to do that. And we've already had a major domestic political crisis as the result of years and years of regime change attempts by the U.S. to starve Venezuela's economy through sanctions, destroy its oil sector, and impoverish large parts of its population. I mean, we reported at the Gray Zone in 2019 or 2020 on a State Department document we found on their website, which they subsequently deleted, bragging about how much damage they had done to Venezuela's economy. Now, what happens? You get a migration wave, and then Biden does temporary protective status for the migrants, and then the American public freaks out, gets anti-immigrant, re-elects Donald Trump, and now they're seeking to do it all over again. In fact, I mean, in one of the few candid discussions we've had in U.S. mainstream media on this issue, Lindsey Graham, heading up the neocon faction of MAGA, or I could call it MEGA, joked with Sean Hannity, it wasn't even a joke, that Venezuela should become the 51st state of the U.S. and they could make Maria Corina Machado governor so they could plunder its resources. Well, what would happen then? 28 million Venezuelans become U.S. citizens. Is that what Trump's MAGA base voted for? No. So they're being mugged by reality. And now you have even pro-war Democrats like Adam Schiff joining up with Rand Paul in the Senate to introduce resolutions against these planned airstrikes inside Venezuela. So that, you know, Adam Schiff, the Democrats, the same people who've been clamoring for this regime change operation, who gave Juan Guaido a standing ovation when he came to Congress, are now realizing, wait a minute, this is like Iraq War 2.0. This is crazy, and it's going to be disastrous for the Western Hemisphere, but we've been warning about it and exposing it for years and years. And I would go on any network that would give me a platform to talk about this. And I was constantly smeared as a, you know, Maduro lover. And now we see the consequences.
It's, I think there's no question that anytime you do these types of things, there's always going to be a backlash. And the backlash, more often than not, is the immigration or emigration to the United States. I mean, this happens over and over again. You know, it kind of bothers me, Max, that never becomes a part of the discussion when it comes to immigration.
Nope.
I never hear people say, yes, we've got a ton of Hondurans here and a ton of Guatemalans here because we started a civil war there that chased people off their land and killed almost 200,000 people. Of course they don't want to live there. They'll go wherever the hell they can go to get out of that place.
They never, ever, even on, you know, left of center, pro-Democratic Party media will never, ever tell you why we keep having all these migration waves. They'll either tell us we either need to just take them in and love them with open arms, or we need to send them to torture centers in El Salvador and humiliate them and denigrate them in the streets. But they'll never give you the context, which is the drug war. That's one of the biggest pieces of context that can be provided that destabilized Mexico. What about NAFTA? Something that Trump capitalized on. NAFTA also destabilized Mexico, destroyed its rural economy, was responsible for a massive migration wave. How about the U.S. propping up leaders like Juan Orlando Hernandez in Honduras, who is a de facto drug lord, who's now in a federal prison in Florida? Why do you think we had so many migrant caravans from Honduras? And now Ecuador has been totally destabilized by cartels. Mm. And who's at the top of that cartel? It's the Noboa family, who's shipping cocaine all around the world in their Bonita banana packages, working with the Albanian mafia. That's where the cocaine goes from Europe. And most of the fentanyl and that kind of drug that's poisoning us is coming from the Pacific coast. It's not coming from Venezuela. Everybody knows that, but nobody says that. And so we get no context. And here's what will happen in Venezuela if Marco Rubio gets his way. There will be a invasion of Venezuela after decapitation strikes. There will be, in that case, civil war inside Venezuela, a bloodbath. Because the Chavistas will have to fight because they know that as Maria Corina Machado, the planned U.S. quote-unquote governor for the day after, has said, she will violently purge all iterations of Chavismo from Venezuela and will basically be Pinochet in a skirt. Do you think the millions of people who have stood for Chavismo for decades are going to put up with that and let themselves be dragged into prisons and executed? So there's going to be a civil war. But one thing they can't do is they can't do some clean military coup because the military is with Nicolas Maduro.
Why did they give her the Nobel Peace Prize? Do you think it was you think they were doing that to take a shot at Trump?
No, I think they were doing that because they wanted regime change in Venezuela and they were trying to give Trump the green light. And if you look at all of the previous Nobel Peace Prizes, or I would call them war prizes, all of them went to, many of them in the past several years, went to U.S. government assets vying for regime change in independent or Russian-aligned or socialist-oriented countries, what we call dissidents. Mm. So this was another case. They happened to give the Nobel Peace Prize to Machado, someone who actually signed a formal document of cooperation with ICC wanted war criminal Benjamin Netanyahu, and then issued a separate letter calling for Netanyahu to invade her own country of Venezuela. So the Nobel Peace Prize has been completely discredited by this award.
Do you think at this point that the actions the Trump administration has taken so far? I was here with Larry Johnson yesterday, and he said any real military person in the United States worth their salt would have said, no, I'm not going to obey that order. I'm a military person. I don't blow up fishing boats. I'm not going to go along with that. So you and I were kind of, you know, criticizing the journalists in our country, and there's certainly room for criticism there. But I do wonder why some of the people, high-ranking people in the military, are going along with some of this tomfoolery.
Well, they're not. The head of SOCOM resigned.
I heard.
I mean, this is a major story. Trump has drummed out top figures. Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, who was clowning around on F-18s yesterday, even though he doesn't know how to fly, ordered military brass to cross 10 time zones to come to Quantico so he could call them fat and gay. They're going to be more defections. So they want, their goal is to get the military leadership in Venezuela to flip. And the highest ranking general in charge of Latin America has resigned over this insane policy, which is not only killing Venezuelans, but has killed two Trinidadian fishermen, is blown up a boat of Colombians, which was displaying a distress signal, and the Trump administration lied and said it was a narco submersible. They are kidnapping people on the high seas. Colombians were kidnapped and then repatriated. Why would you repatriate people if they're high-level narco lords? So they're basically blowing off steam and carrying out a propaganda show by killing fishermen. And this is nothing new. We actually learned about 2 months ago in a New York Times report that when Donald Trump in 2018 went to negotiate with Kim Jong-un in North Korea, which was actually, I thought, an admirable act, he wanted wiretaps of Kim Jong-un, and his people wanted on wiretap. So special forces came in to deploy listening devices on the shore. They were seen by fishermen, got scared, shot a boat full of fishermen, and then gutted them, cut them open so they would fall to the bottom of the sea. So this is, classic, basically state terrorism by the U.S. military playing out in the form of snuff films. And everyone can see that it's another fake war that they're using under the cover of the fake drug war to get a regime change war, so a small coterie of billionaires can get their resources out of Venezuela. It actually makes the deceptive, phony wars that the U.S. waged in Grenada and Panama look elegant.
Let's be clear. If Venezuela didn't have the hydrocarbon resources that it has, there's no way in the hell that they would be doing this, right? In other words, I guess let me be even more direct. This has nothing to do with democracy, nothing to do with the people, and nothing to do really with Maduro. It could be anybody else.
It's hydrocarbon resources, it's gold. Venezuela has an enormous amount of gold and they want that gold. And Venezuela has minerals, rare earth minerals, minerals you need to, for example, power Elon Musk's batteries, his lithium batteries. Why did Elon Musk suddenly become interested in Venezuela and start clamoring for Maria Corina Machado to take over during the last election contest? Well, Elon Musk spelled it out a few years before when he said, "We'll coup whoever we want," referring to stealing the lithium of Bolivia. The new economy is going to rely heavily on electronic batteries and data centers, and China has an enormous domestic wealth of rare earth minerals and is starting to lead the way on EV and solar technology. And the U.S. is falling behind, and that's why we're seeing this new thirst for naked coups and regime change operations in countries that won't give up their mineral wealth because they, you know, the whole basis of Chavismo, of Hugo Chavez's democratic revolution, was to give back the oil wealth in the form of social programs to a population who was living at like a 50 to 60% poverty rate before he came in. And the first thing he did was nationalize the state oil industry, PDVSA, and that's the prize. That's what Maria Corina Machado will give up.
It's almost like giving Citgo back to America. I mean, they've already taken it.
Which is what they did.
Yeah, they've already taken it. But, you know, let's build on that even more and give them every resource in Venezuela that belongs to the people, right?
It's their land, and they fought for it, and they had a democratic revolution electing Chavez. And in 2002, a military coup removed Chavez. The New York Times celebrated the coup, announced that Pedro Carmona was the new hero of Venezuela, the new president. And Chavez was kidnapped to a military base by one of the leaders was Leopoldo López, who's sort of the godfather of the opposition, someone who is holding meetings with Jordan Goudreau, who we were talking about earlier. And then the people of Venezuela marched to Miraflores Palace and demanded that Chavez come back, and he was returned. And it was basically delivering a bloody nose to the U.S. empire and George W. Bush. And a few years later, Chavez was at the podium in New York at the UN General Assembly referring to George W. Bush as Satan. Do you think the U.S. was not going to come back and demand the ouster of his successor? So the war for Venezuela continues.
I can smell the sulfur still from here. I'll never forget that. What happened to Guaido? What's he doing? Is he going to be in this picture if the United States is able to prop up a new quote unquote regime?
That's a great question. And nobody asks it. It's like he was welcomed in 2019 to the U.S. Congress, and everyone was cheering from Pelosi, stood up, and I think AOC even clapped for him. Remember, all the ladies were wearing white. And now he's a forgotten man. He's a nobody. He's actually at Florida International University, and he's a professor. I don't know what he has to teach. He has no academic background. And he himself was a student at George Washington University at their Imperial Training Academy. And now he's at this new kind of right-wing Cuban regime change propaganda outfit called the Adam Smith Institute, which Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor, has compelled Florida taxpayers to pay for to the tune of like $15 million a year. And they're hosting an annual conference with Javier Milei as their keynote speaker. I mean, he's such an economic star that Trump is organizing a $40 billion bailout to save Argentinian bondholders because Milei has destroyed the peso, in addition to running three meme coin rug pulls on international investors. He's one of the biggest economic failures and con men, and they're honoring him at the institute that took in Juan Guaido. Basically, if you're like a failed Latin American stooge leader who does whatever the U.S. wants and then you retire, you get offered a job at this place at Florida International University, and that's where Guaido is. And Goudreau has said it to me, and I've talked to several other Venezuelan emigres who are anti-Maduro who say, you know, Guaido is basically a joke. They was never taken seriously.
Of course. In fact, Pompeo, when he first introduced him to the world, called him Guido. I'll never forget.
I remember that.
I'd like to introduce you to Guido. What is this, a character from a mobster movie or something? Well, you know, those people you're talking about in Miami, unfortunately, those are my people. And, you know, as you often say about some Jewish Americans who seem to be more intent on backing the government of Israel than the government of the United States, we almost have to, like, say, forgive them, for they know not what they do, but they're caught up in this whole thing, and they never stop to think about the consequences or what the actual actions are behind this, because they're just in on it. You know, Venezuelans have just learned a hard lesson. I mean, they went out and supported Trump, voted for Trump, backed Trump, gave money to his campaign, and now he's pretty much pooping on them. You know what I mean?
It's the definition of a fifth column. Yeah. They're, you know, using these elements are using the United States government as a vehicle for settling scores in other countries, and members of the U.S. military are expected to fight and die for these foreign causes and foreign intrigues. And I think a large part of the American public's waking up to it. Younger Republicans or younger people on the right, I guess you could call them conservatives, are waking up to this issue, and there's no support for this among younger progressives. But I also noticed an interesting trend among younger Cuban Americans, which is that they actually liked normalization with Cuba because it was easier for them to go back and visit their families and go to this country. And, you know, they hadn't lived through the Bay of Pigs and all of these other intrigues. And I think, you know, they would want a more peaceful, harmonious relationship with Cuba. But Venezuela and the regime change operation there is intended, from Marco Rubio's perspective, to have a ricochet effect. From Rubio's point of view, it's purely ideological. It's all about Doral and South Florida. He wants to destroy the engine that has sustained the Cuban Revolution as the U.S. embargo tightens, and that's Venezuela. So once they're done with Venezuela, they're going to move to Cuba. They're going to move to Nicaragua, which has a socialist-oriented nationalist government, which is actually very popular inside Nicaragua. And Trump is now threatening Nicaragua with 100% tariffs, which will have the usual effect of causing a migration wave from a country that has not had many migrants to the U.S. You don't meet a lot of Nicaraguans around the U.S. If they go to work, you know, labor jobs, they'll go to Costa Rica. So this is another disaster in the waiting, and it has to stop at Venezuela with some sanity. And that means the U.S. people need to demand that their members of Congress actually vote on this, and U.S. journalists need to start researching and filing FOIA requests on what the U.S. is doing in the Caribbean, and ask tough questions, which are not possible at the Pentagon, because the Pentagon has imposed new censorship rules, which resemble those of the supposed authoritarian countries the U.S. constantly denounces.
You know what's really cool, though? And I'm going to close with this because it's about you. You have been described, and if you go on the Googles and look for Max Blumenthal, they say you're a lefty and all this stuff. But within the last couple of years, or maybe less, I'm not sure, you have become almost universally engaging to all kinds of people. I see people quoting you on the right. I see people quoting you on the left. And certainly, you know, people like Judge Napolitano, who's somewhere in the middle. So do you recognize that, where you used to be over here and now you're kind of making friends? There's like this whole new group in the United States. I don't know how to classify us, but we're not lefties. We're not righties. We're, I think, just truth tellers.
Well, it's not about me or you or any one individual. It's about what's happening to the United States. I mean, we're an empire in decline. People are starting to look at the real sources of the weakening dollar and their declining standard of life, and they're realizing there are bigger issues here that relate to geopolitics, that relate to the economy, that relate to late capitalism. And so they're starting to look past the phony culture wars that have been deployed to polarize and divide us, so oligarchs can run away with the store. And they're not interested in debating as much about drag queens as they are about regime change wars. And I think that's a very refreshing development in this country. It's something that we're trying to tap into at the Gray Zone, where our mission is simply to tell people what they're not supposed to know. And I on a sort of... I don't know if it's a related note, but I'm working on a script right now about Israel's violation of ceasefires throughout history. And I came upon a mono you did with Jim Clancy back in 2008 about Israel violating the ceasefire to launch the first major Gaza war, which has led straight to this genocide. And I mean, that was a legendary CNN moment that wasn't supposed to happen, and you were responsible. So, you know, there have been these sort of interruptions in the narrative.
I got in trouble for it. I remember. You're great, Max. Thanks so much for sharing so much of your time. My best to Anya and the rest of the crew. You guys are doing really great work. Everybody at home, please check out The Gray Zone if you haven't already. It's the best, some of the best reporting you'll see anywhere in the world. Thanks again, Max.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
All right, let's go to our mailbag now. And we begin with Steve, who's watching us from Australia. We have so many people, by the way, who watch us in Australia. He says, thanks for the interesting videos. The Australian people need to hear what you are saying. Thanks, Steve. I think they're starting to get it there, down under. Let's go to Ireland now, where Ireland diaspora says, speaking of censorship, yes, the EU banned RT and several other Russian media in 2022. I can't watch RT in Ireland unless, of course, I pay for a stable VPN, which we should not have to do. What does that say, by the way? Think about this. What does it say when a government says that you can't hear what somebody has to say? By the way, in Russia, the BBC, CNN are welcome. They're even allowed to stand up at a Putin news conference and ask the president questions. What does that tell you about those two very different treatments? AGRRB says he's surprised that Mr. Putin accepted the meeting in Budapest. He says Europe has assured safe passage. This could end in disaster, and this is very dangerous. I'm hearing a lot of people saying that. I've been reading that same commentary, that AGRRR. But you know what? I got to tell you, I think he, Mr. Putin, is actually better off there in Hungary, Budapest, than he was in Alaska. I trust Viktor Orban. I just do. Finally, Patino says, we voted for Trump to end the wars, and we're back to the same old thing. You should have known, Mr. Patino. You should have known. All right, so if you've got some thoughts that you want to share, please let me know. Go to YouTube. Go to my podcast, Journalistically Speaking. There are a ton of people engaging there, and I engage back, especially over the weekend. Don't hold back. Let me know what you think, whether you like what we're doing or don't like what we're doing. I'm also on X. Look for me there on Rick Sanchez TV. I'll be looking for you next time. And thanks so much for being with us. See you next.